Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He'll call an Uber because it's the UBP. Roll with that.
We have been chatting for at least 20 minutes before this podcast started, Scott. You could have come up with a much better opening line than that. But at the same time, I do appreciate it.
Yes, this is the UBP, the Entitled Banter Podcast. I am your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everybody.
Which I feel like I say in the same cadence every week. It rolls off the tongue quite literally, but it's the two people that are bringing to you all sorts of community submitted questions and stuff. Now, we're recording a day early and because you're off tomorrow, I'm away on holiday for my little birthday.
Happy pre-birthday, Scott.
Thank you. I'm loving the pre-birthday. It doesn't feel like it's this weekend. You know, when you get to a certain age where you're just sort of, oh yeah, it's just there and I'll eat cake on the day, but yeah.
I'm just saying that Christmas has not been the same since I've hit 30. Like, like as soon as I hit 30, I became jaded. It just became like, oh, Christmas is just a cynical form of capitalism. And it was like smoking my big, like, at my hype pipe. And then I was just like, nah, it's not happening.
Reading that statistic about how it's like, is it 700 miles of wrapping paper gets wasted every year or something? That's only the UK.
Think of the dolphins.
Think of the wildlife.
Yeah.
But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. I rolled in a few different previous UBP carryovers. I also brought together some questions that we used on the Wednesday podcast because we did a Q&A for the main podcast.
I bloody well saw that, mate. I was gonna message you and I was gonna be like, copyright infringement, UBP. I'll be sending
here's a question for you. Why are you ripping this off? Because it was 40 degree heat, Jules. We were sitting
in the
tiny little room. How was the heat wave down south?
Absolutely disgusting. I feel like if you were to scrape down my back using one of those like squeegees, you probably would have been able to wring an entire bucket off of me. Oh, de God would have been the phrase, the scent of the day.
I'll tell you what, if you'd bottled that, someone would have bought that. I'm just saying, if you sold your back sweat you'll probably let yourselves know it on Twitter when we do the next round of questions, but someone out there would buy your back sweat.
Okay. Here's the deal. If you are said person who really would like to have some of my bodily fluids, sweat or otherwise, I will be charging a premium, but I will also be donating that money to charity because some good has to come out of that evil. I tell
yes,
you that.
Yes, we can course correct from the days of whatever Twitch streamer it was selling their bathwater.
Amaranth?
Maybe it was Amaranth.
I know that she was selling farts in a jar. No jokes. Look. And this is the thing. I am so here for this because it's like in a world in which that idea seems utterly ridiculous, hustler's got to hustle. If somebody's going to pay you money for it, why not?
Like, you're not wrong. I remember back in like, it would have been 2005 or six when Ozzy Osbourne sold a blister or a scab on eBay and everyone was like, oh my God, what are you doing? And I very much stand by that general sentiment. But at the same time, I don't know if it's better or worse than farts in a jar or there was someone selling air in a jar as well from like different countries.
No idea.
Like, I bet there's a whole cottage industry.
Like bottled air from like
it was like bottled clean air, and I think it was going to, I forget which city it was that had like a level of smog that was so bad, and they're like, here's some fresh air for you in a can.
Which is so funny because obviously that is a major joke of the Spaceballs film where the is like trying, like they have no air or clean air, so they're constantly like opening cans of fresh air and just like huffing up their nose. It's brilliant.
That's the good stuff.
That's reality now. We live in a comedy, farcically.
Amount of various comedy sketches that have come true, including that. Overall, this is the Entitled Banter Podcast where we ask you for whatever you'd like us to talk about each week. And like I said, I've rolled together some various things. So we'll get through as many questions as
we can. What you're saying is that we're drawing from the golden take trough, which basically sits underneath the regular take trough and all the overspill goes into that. It's like a bar mat, but instead of a disgusting pint at the end of an evening, this is a delicious nectar of the gods that we people now pour into your open mouths like baby birds.
Slurp it up. And so I've rolled together various questions from the UBP and from the main pod, because we got loads. I was like, sure. Oh, we'll give you guys like an hour to submit stuff, and we got loads through anyway. So opening question from Andy N7K, who says, do you two think that The Last of Us Part 1, the remake, is a cash grab by Naughty Dog? Now, I don't know if you've seen the latest leaks.
Yes, I have. I've went on to the site and I had a look at all the leaks, and I thought to myself, am I on the right page? Because I thought that this was already the game that had already come out, the remastered version. And then I had to double check just to make sure that there was no more information on said page. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that was the latest PS5 version.
Would you like to pay £70 for a game from 2013 with some nicer visuals?
I feel really bad because I know that work has gone into this.
Yes,
and I know that they are basically polishing an already brilliant gem. But at the same time, I don't want to pay £70 for this experience alone. I feel like it looks amazing. The combat does look really slick, but it doesn't look any different from what I've already played. So I do have to look at it and be like, why for this price? Could it not have been a slightly discounted price?
I think it's a weird, I don't think it's a cash grab. I think that label sort of is too reductive to, like Jules said, you know, the amount of work that's been put in. But I do see the argument of, you know, like that general idea that when it was revealed, that idea of it having new combat mechanics and having new gameplay systems, and a lot of people assuming that that would mean you've taken Last of Us 2's engine or Last of Us 2's combat and put that into Last of Us 1. Now, apparently, I mean, according to the PlayStation Store listing, it has been remade from the ground up using their newer game engine. But in terms of how it plays, it looks like it plays the same as Last of Us 1, which is fine. That's still one of my favorite games of all time. But I think £70, like you said, is too egregious for a visual overhaul.
Yeah, I agree. And while I watched some of the combat play out, I did notice slight differences here and there. Mm. I would say that the aiming and animations do seem a lot more fluid. Yes. The flow between close combat and ranged didn't seem as clunky as it sometimes could be, because I don't know about you, but I had a few instances on the original version of the game where you would basically shoot, they'd get too close, oh dear, try and get out a melee weapon, but then you'd like almost have to be in the right angle.
It was very chunky.
So you'd end up just sort of like missing entirely and be like, okay, I'm dead now because of that.
Yeah, I think it's like one of those things where I always really loved Last of Us 1's combat. I get that a lot of people don't like it and they have qualms like what you just said. I always really like that feel of Joel as like, he's almost like a walking fridge. Like he's so heavy and chunky and has so much momentum and everything. But yeah, looking at the remake stuff, and it's over on Reset Era at the minute, it'll probably get taken down, but there's a few gameplay clips out there showing the remake. But like you said, when you first put it on, I had the exact same thing of like, has someone inserted a clip of the old Last of Us as a comparison? It's like, oh no, that is actually the remake. I had the same reaction to the initial screenshots, but obviously if you side by side them, you can tell it's the remake that has been worked put into it, but it doesn't blow you away.
I feel like if we're being honest, and I feel like that's what Naughty Dog needs to do with its customers, is that the use of the word remade from the ground up is something that really does need to be banned unless it's actually true, because it just stinks of hyperbole. Like what they've actually probably done is they've taken it back to a design core elements, you know, when you've got all of your like wireframe sketches of the city and stuff like that, and applied their new graphics engine or physics engine over the top of that. Mm-hmm. That technically is being remade from the ground up at that point. You technically can stamp your organic seal of approval onto that, but it's not actually true in the sense of what it creates in the mind of a consumer. Remade from the ground up means you went back to literally the code and went back and started rewriting that to begin it anew. Whereas this is very much plonked on shell, it feels like. I feel like cash grab, possibly too much. It's not the FIFA Legacy editions for the Switch that Switch owners are still enjoying.
No,
FIFA
it's 20, it's not that,
what,
actually.
18 now, I think that they're on. It's definitely not that.
There's a distinction to be made in terms of like the cash grab part is not the core of the production. Obviously, the production has meticulous amounts of effort been put into it. It's a worthwhile game to exist and a worthwhile re-release to exist. The cash grab part is maybe that extra 10, 20 pounds when you could have sold it for 50 or you could have sold it for 40. Yeah. That's the grabby part, not the core of it.
With that caveat added to it, then I actually probably would err on saying, yeah, it is much more of a cash grab in that sense, because like you say, 20 quid on top of what I would feel comfortable paying maybe 45 to 50 pounds for this, adjusting for inflation on top of a game that I paid £40 for originally. So I can't...
It's like a reach. It's sort of like, well, we're going to see what we can get away with. It is The Last of Us. We do have the HBO show coming up. Last of Us 2 still sold very well. Mm-hmm. And we do have the multiplayer game coming. So it is one of our top tier franchises. Let's see if we can sell it for £70. And I guess we'll just see how that goes. The general reception, even to the when they ended, I think it was... the PlayStation Experience show, whatever it was, when they announced the last, oh, it was the Summer Games Fest, when they announced Last of Us 1 remake, the general reception was, oh, okay, like, sure. Like, you're ending the show on a remake? Okay.
Yeah, and now it's like, a strange vibe, that wasn't
it? Yeah, and then now it's like, and it does play very similar, and it does, you know, it's not like that big of a crossover. It doesn't feel like it's from the ground up. So, and it's going to be £70. So I feel like it's in a weird space at the minute where it's, we'll just see whether the silent majority of gamers overall do end up buying it for that amount. I also, I don't know about you, really don't like the new character models. I know that they're just taken from the flashback scene of Last of Us 2.
Yes.
But I way prefer the look of Joel and Ellie from 2013.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I feel like Joel especially actually looks like in better shape in a weird way. He looks more like aesthetically pleasing. And I feel like a more haggard and run down version of him suits the actual storyline better. This is a man who's broken, and it's taken a literal emotional and physical toll on him. So it's like, now he's more, I don't know.
That's a really good point, because the model
he's aesthetically upbeat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, the model they've taken, I imagine there'll be changes if you start zooming into his face, maybe there's more scars on him or more like a weathered sort of look to him or something. But in theory, the model they've taken is from the middle of Last of Us 2, the flashback scene. So when him and Ellie are hanging out at the museum, which is one of the heights of their relationship together. But you're inserting that into a point in The Last of Us 1 where they barely know each other, and he's still the guy that's coming off being a smuggler and a thief and someone who ambushed people for money and product. And everything. So yeah, that's a really good point, that actually if you just insert that character model in, it does look a lot more sort of friendly or whatever.
He needs to look utterly bedraggled, like when you first meet him, because of the fact that he's got nothing left. Like there was literally no point for his existence other than pure survival instinct. And that needs to come across in the aesthetics. I think like the softening of him made you perceive him differently as the game went on. So to start with that thing there, maybe we'll actually have a tonal implication that's actually detrimental to the overall experience.
I think that's a really interesting point. I think there's something about the Last of Us 1 remake. I think for me, it's mostly the price. I just think the fact that they're hanging a premium price point on it is the thing that sort of makes me, and now that I've seen some of the gameplay, I go, oh, well, this is just the same game again. Like, really? Like, I mean, yeah, it's going to look a bit better, but okay, it's, you know, I've done this. I've played Last of Us a bunch of times. I played the remastered version. Now it's the remake again. I think it's a hard line for them to walk, and I guess that's why they're not talking about the gameplay more, and it's had to leak, because the more they show it, like, the more people are going to go, well, that's
exactly
not worth
the less the hype actually is for it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an interesting thing that we'll see shake out across the rest of this year. Next question from McAllister NYC, who says, the Switch has been out for about 5 years. We're due for a new non-OLED console in the next 2 to 3 years. Are Nintendo trapped by the versatility of the Switch into making another hybrid console? Would just another at-home one be acceptable, or does it feel like they're locked in? I assume this is the way for them. But
yeah, I feel like they've absolutely captured a market that didn't even exist until they invented it with the whole sort of like, you have a fully handheld console. However, when you look at the sort of impact that the Steam Deck is having with the functionality that it can offer, excluding its price tag, they are now getting competitors in the market that they thought they had completely monopolized. I would say it would not surprise me if Nintendo did absolutely go for a at-home console fully again down the line, and use the Switch to basically fulfill a Nintendo 3DS, 4DS role in the future. So it's like they offer a handheld only console that is super powerful, but then they have an at-home console that has another amazing feature.
That's kind of like the split with the Lite, where it's like doesn't have the gyro, the detachable Joy-Cons or anything.
Exactly. And I'm trying to think, because when you try and look at Nintendo's history of how they've developed consoles, they've always come across with like one singular idea in mind that represents that entire console generation. So you had like the touch controls and the screen gamepad with the Wii U. The Wii obviously had the motion controls. Before that, the GameCube was, it is so small, it is completely portable, and that means that it's perfect for like a game with friends. You look at the current state of the video game as a medium now, and we've got VR, AR technology is still very prevalent and still is being sort of explored here and there. I would put money down on a Nintendo announcing something with proper VR exclusivity that is almost like it's a VR only console.
Right.
Something mad like that, because they still can pull it out of the bag. Like you take a look at the bloody Virtual Boy, you took at Nintendo Labo, and you realize that there is some truly insane people still in charge over there.
Oh, I love that they saw the VR headsets that were doing the rounds and went, well, we'll do one out of cardboard. Just slot your Switch into it.
And I feel like they are just going to do something like that again. It will be like, you won't be expecting the GameCube 2. It will be like a tiny, I don't know, like, what's a crazy shape for a console? It will look like a jellyfish, right? It will look like a jellyfish, right? And it'll be see-through and you'll click the button. It'll start whirring. Its eyes will come and open. It will scan you and you'll be in the game.
It looks like that Dragon Quest mad. Slime controller, just a big blob.
Oh, it's Slime Jesus getting a shout
Slime
out.
Jesus.
there he is.
That's a really good point, though, that Nintendo, yeah, they tend to do this sort of sequel console thing, like the new DSi Lite or whatever it was. They did that. And it's weird. I have a fan theory, personal theory, whatever it is, that the only reason we got the OLED Switch was because the factory side of things didn't fulfill their orders on the processing chips to allow for a 4K Switch. Because that's what all the reports were pointing at, the Bloomberg stuff, the Kotaku stuff. Everyone was saying, and there was insiders inside the factory saying, yes, we're manufacturing these processing chips.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, that stuff didn't come together. So I feel like Nintendo went, let's just cut our losses. And we've still got this deal with the new screen company or whatever. Let's just do another Switch with an OLED screen. And that was like the bare minimum that they could do. And so I wonder whether that console is then classed as the sequel to the Switch, or if the Super Nintendo Switch or whatever is still in the pipeline, and then they move on. But either way, your point's very good, that they always, when they're really like ready for the next generation, it's always a huge step. Yeah. I just wonder how much they're still accessing the hybrid function, let's say, of like the Switch.
It's an interesting one, because Nintendo, you feel like just when you've got them figured out, they pull a complete U-turn and do something different. That's what makes them so beloved and kind of terrifying as a company, because you just don't know where they're going to go next.
No, I also think that we said this on the main podcast, but I feel like they will they'll release Breath of the Wild 2 or whatever that thing's going to be called with the next Mario, and they'll be like 4K Switch only. They'll be they'll be built to take advantage of the new Switch. They'll do that whole thing, and it'll be on people, morons like me, to fork out another £300 or £400 or whatever it is to keep up with the next Switch. Because I got an OLED Switch, it's fine. It's very nice. I mean, we got them.
It's fine for you because you already had a Switch. But for me, coming into that, having the best possible Switch, I was like, oh man, what have I been missing out on? I've been loving playing that. Anytime that I've got a journey that takes over an hour, it's in the bag. I take it with me wherever I go. I've been absolutely rinsing some of Mario Strikers recently to the point where I actually ran out of content very quickly on it. And I was just like, yeah, fair enough. The new update's coming out fairly.
I was going to say they've just done, I think it's out today tomorrow by the time people hear this. But it's like Daisy and Shy Guy and a new arena and stuff. Yeah. But I think that like the Switch overall is one of the best consoles on the market. I actually, when we did a ranking of the best consoles right now, I did put that at number one. I do think, considering the exclusives, considering the portability of it, and the amount of third-party indies that make it on there, I do think it's like an incredible system. But yeah,
there is nothing quite like it.
No, I just want something with a better battery life, I think, for me, would just be something like that, and let it be able to handle the higher fidelity games. Isn't I don't necessarily just, need the gimmick.
It's absolutely mad, isn't it, that we live in this current age where we can have all of these crazy pieces of technology, like, you know, you've got like portable computers in your phone, effectively, but yet none of them can last like more than a day's worth of like, regular usage. It's like, it's how they get you. You've got to go home and charge up, fellas. Like, that's it.
The thing. That feels like the most unspoken reality of our current time, is that everything dies in 2 to 3 hours. Like, it's like, oh, you can get a Valve Steam Deck. It can play Elden Ring. Like, yeah, for like an hour, and then it'll die. Like, maybe a couple hours.
Hey, you can get a brand new laptop for work. Hey, that's died as well, isn't it, mate? little inside joke there.
Let's just say that having 10,000 antivirus programs running in the background will sap the living hell out of your work laptop.
Surprising that.
Whether you wanted to or not. Next question down from Nate the Gamer, who says, do you think games that come day and date to services like Game Pass and PlayStation Plus get an easier time on reviews and by people because they're perceived as free games? I don't think they get a free pass on reviews, but I do think that the general consumer attitude is like, well, I can dip in and try this, and if it's not for me, then whatever.
That is actually a really great shout. However, what if we start unpacking that thought and talk about perceived value of games in general that come to Game Pass on day one? Yes, you've got this brand new game there. And yes, like you say, you may be more charitable towards it because you haven't technically paid for it per game, even though you are paying for the service.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The value of that game is significantly lessened because it is launching alongside maybe 10 to 12 other titles on the same day, and each are promoted as being the new hotness for you to try out. It's an overwhelming glut of content that unfortunately homogenizes how you perceive content. If it ain't the next Elden Ring, then it is as bad as the last game in that list.
That's I always think that if you've paid money for something directly, if it's in your hand, or if you've just bought it as a single purchase, you're way more incentivized to see it through. And I think that impacts like holistic view of a storyline or holistic view of game mechanics or progression or whatever it is. I'm curious how developers react to this stuff going forward. It depends how much these monthly models become the norm. Obviously Sony are experimenting with it at the minute, and Xbox have just doubled down on it entirely, which is great. They've made Game Pass it is literally the best deal in gaming right now. But it is interesting of like, does overall playtime and retention just drop the hell off because it doesn't matter, quote unquote, because you've got seven other things to play and you'll have 10 more next month or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I think the impact will be on retention. I think the games still get reviewed. I think that's that person's job to review the game. They're still going to go through it. But in terms of the general consumer approach to it, I did do a Twitter poll asking if people still finish the games that they get on Game Pass.
And I remember you did that still, a while back, didn't you? Yeah,
it was still three quarters towards, yes, well, if I finish my games, but it was like, I play less, I make sure I get through them, and then I get to the next thing. So it's almost like on the Xbox side, they have to balance how long those games are available.
Like I said to you, I have on my Xbox Game Pass now, I have like a sidebar. So it's like all the games that I want to, I've made a note of like in a doc or something like that. But the ones that I've actually installed, I can only have a maximum of five, and I can only uninstall one once I've finished it, unless I absolutely hate it or
that's really good
with it and then get rid of it.
Yeah.
It saves on hard drive space loads as well, because of the fact that I don't know how many of us have like our Steam libraries completely full of games that are pre-installed, ready to go, but we are just not playing them.
Well, that's really
limit,
Steam deck,
limit your choice down a little bit, and that means that you've curated to, this is the thing I'm feeling right now, and then you can start pushing forward.
Because I live the big dip life, so I'll dip into a bunch of different stuff and then see what grabs me. So Stray, I did in one sitting. Citizen Sleeper, I did in one sitting. Like a Sifu, or pretty much one sitting. Like it depends what it is. If something grabs, then I play all the way through it. If it was for review, I would get through it.
Yep.
But like I know exactly what Nate is getting at in terms of like that idea of here's 10 things, like a buffet. Like if it was a buffet of 10 things versus one of those items on a single plate, you do view it differently. And you're more incentivized to finish that single item on the plate if it was by itself, as opposed to being part of 10 other things.
What is that place that's in Newcastle where you can go and you can eat around the world? Do you remember that place?
There was two of them. Yeah, they've both gone now. But they're Newcastle upon Tyne in the Northeast. Yeah, there was, oh my God, I forget the names of them. Dynasty was one of them.
So basically it was just like a buffet thing where you could go to different sectors of the world and sample all the delights from there.
Really cool.
It's a great idea, but what was quite funny is that your metaphor works in a sense of, say you go to like grab some like spring rolls, then you'll go and like top it up with a bit of curry, then you'll go and get a bit of that. By the time that you get back, your plate is such a mishmash of things that it all just kind of like seeps into one another. You've got like curry sauce on the spring rolls. You've got your pizza is now dipped into some hoisin sauce.
Tell you what,
probably is actually not terrible.
Mango sauce on a cheese pizza is incredible. Indian mango sauce. Bang that on a cheese pizza, mate, or dip it in.
I hands down say that Indian food, like Indian takeaway food, has the best dips ever. You've got like your yogurty cooling dips, you've got your spicy sort of pickle dips, you've got your amazing mango chutney, that sort of red salsa that is like a little bit bitter, but oh man, it's so good.
I think, yeah, because you combine that with some other stuff and it works. I was going to say though, like that whole approach of like, okay, you see the amount of different options available to you, you plate it up with 20 different things and you try them all together and they don't really work. So sometimes they do, but most of it doesn't, or whatever, and you end up going back to the one thing that did work. I wonder how much that reflects the overall approach that loads of companies have right now of, here's your monthly service. There's tons of stuff on it. Yeah. You know, the binge model, does that compare to a single show every week? For example, Better Call Saul is doing extremely well right now, especially in terms of social media conversations and everything, mm-hmm. because it is week to week and it does have those conversations in between it. And it's not, if Better Call Saul was just on a chunk of shows with 20 other things that week, I wonder how much it would still take off.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, it's just that whole general approach of like, how do you sort of itemize interest, let's say.
The Hitman games had a perfect way of maintaining audience interest by going episodic. It was a very strange move when it first was announced that they were going to go down that route, but it has worked in their favor so well, because the first game releasing, letting players explore those very interactive levels and seeing everything they've got to see in them before then releasing the next level, and that they were just pushing forward with content released at a regular, consistent and quality rate, that it just meant that the Hitman of, was it 20, what was it, when was the
2016
reboot?
Was the reboot one
that was I honestly still think that that's one of my favorite experiences.
Oh dude, it's like the best through. One yeah.
Like, I know that Hitman 2 and 3, the ones obviously that came after that, improved on a lot of methods on it, but I just love the episodic delivery of it. I didn't make sense when I was looking at it on paper, but it felt so
I think
good.
The term episodic had such a poisonous connotation back then, because it was like, oh my god, they're going to itemize and, you know, monetize each individual thing, but it worked.
It was also because it came out around the same time that Telltale Games were going through the ringer with their Walking Dead thing of like, because it was an oversaturated market with the episodic release format, but they did it in a way that kind of actually broke the mold and made great sense. I'd like to see more games do that. I wouldn't like to see single player narrative games necessarily released with chunks, but I do think that there is a definite way for
somewhere in here is like the happy medium of the two. Like, I quite like, in theory, I like the way that the PlayStation are doing their PlayStation Premium stuff, where it's like we'll give you a handful of classic games every couple of months, as opposed to here's the entire PlayStation 1 library all in one go. I think that is a way to sort of get a conversation going around Tekken 3 or Soul Reaver, because that's arriving that month or something. There's a way to find the hybrid. I think at the minute so many companies, there's so many different mediums are trying monthly service plans, and I think that's too much stuff to keep up with. I think in games, when the average game time is like 20 hours, you know, being given 200 hours of games every couple months is just way too much for most people.
Yeah, I agree.
But I guess we'll see how it goes. Next question from Zach, who says, did you ever play Legend of Dragoon growing up? It's better than Final Fantasy VII, in my humble opinion.
I have played Legend of Dragoon. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, but unfortunately, I never ever got the secret final boss against, is it Magus, who is like, you have to collect all these crazy things, go up a stupidly difficult tower, and then you have like a super final boss. I remember reading guides about it and just thinking, oh, I can get there, but I could just never ever muster up enough strength to do it. There exists a time of the alt Final Fantasy games, of when RPGs were expanding and trying new things, and they were just beautiful games that unfortunately will never see the light of day again. It's Legend of Dragoon, apologies, and Vagrant Story will always be up there.
Vagrant Story's art style is stunning.
It's amazing.
I didn't play Legend of Dragoon. I know what it is. I just, this reminds me of that whole post-90s JRPG boom where I couldn't get enough. I was playing, did you play Legaia? Or Legaia 2?
No, Disgaea? I don't remember that.
The different things.
But... I think I did play Disgaea, but I don't know if I played it via my cousin, if you know what I mean.
There was like that, the Breath of Fire stuff as well. Was it Breath of Fire? Breath of the Wild. But
There's Wild Guns as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, or Wild Arms.
Wild Arms. That's
Wild Arms,
I mean,
is the one that's now on the PlayStation service, but there's like Wild something else. Is like a first-person shooter gallery thing. But yeah, I love all those things. I never played Dragoon, but I've always heard good things about it. It being better than Final Fantasy VII is a very niche take, but you might find, you know, companions if but people get in touch.
When Square Enix were Squaresoft, they were doing absolute wonders with RPGs. I mean, look at how they dealt with Parasite Eve as well. That game was phenom in a bombshell. Loved it. Loved it, mate.
Massive shout. Next question from PG Quips, who says, hey legends, hope you're both doing very well, happy and healthy. If you could make a video game of any childhood TV show, what would it be? I'd want Supermassive to take a shot at the Demon Headmaster or Goosebumps IP.
Whoa.
Or maybe someone could make a Pat Shop's Funhouse Battle Royale. Now, Pat Shop's Funhouse, that's pretty much Fall Guys. If you're
It pretty much is, actually.
That nigh on exists. Anyway, Demon Headmaster would be brilliant. That's like that PS2, I always forget the name, Obscure, the game that was like demonic, high school thing. Bring that back.
That would be amazing, because their approach to sort of narrative storytelling as well and having a singular character as evil as the Demon Headmaster would be fantastic.
I've got a hell of a shout for this, by the way. Sorry to slightly cut you off. What if Bernard's Watch came back? don't know if you watched Bernard's Watch.
What was Bernard's Watch about?
Bernard's Watch, he had a little stopwatch and he could click it to go back and forward through time. Now, I've not seen it since I was about five, but I remember thinking it was extremely cool. And if he would go up to the front of the class and then they would ask him something, he hadn't done the homework. So he would like click, he'd freeze time with his watch and he would like read the answers on the board. And then he would go back and he'd click it again. He'd be like, oh, it's Cambodia or whatever it is. And then they'd be like,
basically, they would cheat. He would cheat his way using the watch.
He'd just cheat himself through life. But young me was like, that's brilliant. I'd love a little cheeky watch that could freeze time and rewind stuff.
It's weird though, because BBC Children's TV had some really odd and quite disturbing like things. Like, do you remember the Queen's Nose?
I don't know the name, funnily enough. But so I know
the
that
Queen's
is.
Nose was this. A child had a magic 50 pence piece for our American and overseas friends out there. 50p is basically what you'd lob at people on the bus. I kid, obviously. It's a form of currency, obviously.
Yes. Half a pound.
And it's like hexagonal, isn't it?
Yeah. I love how much we don't use coins anymore.
Exactly.
How many sides they have.
It's quite a weighty coin is what I'm trying to say. And what happened is that this kid found this magical 50p. And if you rub the Queen's nose, which I bet she absolutely loved, it would grant you a wish. And if you lost the coin, the wish would transfer over to the person that picked up it. But it got really disturbing because it was like the main character kept on like finding ways to lose the 50p, or somebody became aware that the 50p existed and was trying to steal it off them and use it for evil wishing and stuff like that. And it was always like, it was just
an Assassin's Creed game.
I don't know. It was just really disturbing. I was just didn't enjoy that. Like,
I just had to Google a show there, cause I remembered watching something when I was tiny. The words that I used to find this were old woman dog playing TV show.
What's it called?
Do you remember?
No, I can remember this. It was, not up in the air. Come fly with me. Come fly with me.
Come outside. You're very, very close.
Damn it.
Following Auntie Mabel and her dog Pippin. That
thing
was stellar. All you need to do is make a come outside plugin for Microsoft Flight Simulator, and I'm there.
Nope. All right, let's go one step further.
Go on.
Let's get the Ace Combat team to remake that show as a literal dogfight simulator.
I would love to take care of little Pippin. Just use all the animal animations from Fable or something to loop the loops. Yeah, there's a bevy. Clearly, there's a bevy of BBC shows that would make brilliant action games.
I would also like to get the, I can't believe I'm giving them a shout out, Konami developers who worked on the Silent Hill games. Let's get them to do a episodic format, because we love episodic formats now, of the R.L. Stine's Goosebumps.
You could do an Until Dawn style Goosebump thing. R.L. Stine feels like, as much as the Goosebumps is a huge IP, I know they did a couple of movies for it, but it has never really,
there might be some games. Let's actually Google
PS1
this,
or something. I feel like I saw a Goosebumps PS1 game like as a box art when I was a kid. But
Goosebumps video game, and there's actually been quite a fair few. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One came out in 2020. Goosebumps Dead of Night was for the PS4. It got a 7 out of 10 on Steam.
Maybe there's a whole bunch of Goosebumps fans going like, finally, someone's talking about the real.
Well, yeah, of course there is. It's gonna be Ash Millman. That's the only person that's like playing this game.
She's never mentioned it. Considering that she's such a massive horror aficionado, she's never brought up Goosebumps before.
Dude, I'm watching the trailer for this and this is incredible. There is a house that's haunted by puppets, like ventriloquist dummies, crazy clowns, and also garden gnomes. And
it's not that far off Resident Evil, really.
You've got to go around in first person perspective, basically hunting ghosts. Amazing.
I would take that. I think, like I said, that's such a big like crossover age gappy IP. I'm surprised that it hasn't been driven into the ground more, or at least in a bigger marketing sense.
That is utterly insane. I need to get this game. I need to get this.
Final question from Rex Wolfley, who says, how likely is it that PlayStation will monitor activity on their new PlayStation Plus service? If so, which past franchises would you push for people to play in the hopes that the decision makers see this and resurrect them?
Do you mean in the sense that they would be able to share the sort of like, these are how many people are playing these old PlayStation 1 classics?
And
resurrect them.
Yes, I assume this is what they're doing, because funnily enough, this month was meant to be Dino Crisis, the original one. It was listed on the Italian store and then it didn't make it to the West. So the other stores and everything, and it didn't come out in the Italian PlayStation store either. But I would use this. If I was them, I would use this as a test bed. You put out Soul Reaver, you put out Dino Crisis or Bishy Bashy Special or whatever. Yep. And then you go, okay, X million of people responded to this. We should do something with it. It's kind of like the reason that, like, 9 times out of 10, when a remaster gets greenlit, not a remake necessarily, but a remaster, is just to test the waters with the audience and see if it's worth doing something else. Maybe there's a way to carry them across from the original to the new one as well, if you time it right.
Yeah, just going back to sort of like what games I would want people to play in order to do it. It's hard to say because it's like what's coming to the. If we knew what was coming to the actual storefront,
that's the thing. They've not said at all. Like, I mean, right now it's a paltry amount of PS1 games that are on there. Like, it's everybody's golf and Jumping Flash. Like,
I like Jumping Flash. I mean, it's still like motion sickness. The video game. Do you remember a video game called No One Can Stop Mr. Domino?
Hell yeah, dude. That thing creeped me out when I was a kid. I think it's just I read the title quite literally and I thought it was like he's coming at you, like it's a horror thing. I mean, I was like six or whatever.
He's here! Mr. Domino's here! Watch out!
No one can stop Mr. Domino! And so like he's coming at you on the box art, and then in the game himself, he's getting there. So I don't know. Young me, couldn't vibe with Mr. Domino, but I'm sure he's all right now.
Because of the fact that you and I have been, and James Dowse, have been playing a lot of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge, and what a fantastic game
of the year, to be honest. Maybe.
And obviously we've had the amazing Streets of Rage 4 and a few other classic beat-em-ups sort of like get a lease of life. Mm-hmm. What if we got Fighting Force back again?
I would
again?
Take Fighting Force. I have Fighting Force on my Steam Deck.
It's fun and it's dumb. It's very dumb.
Yeah, it was neat. I just like 3D brawlers and there's nowhere near enough of them. Like I said, I'll point to Minority Report all day long. That game is one of the only decent 3D brawlers other than like Urban Reign or the Tekken Force modes.
It's weird, isn't it? Because there's so many games that feel like it's money left on the table considering the market where it stands now, despite the fact that I can imagine that some games back in the day, they maybe didn't review as well as they needed them to, and they thought, okay, we'll carry on with another franchise instead of this one. But do you remember when there was like a period in time when there was like loads of Resident Evil clones that came out, kind of like Cold Fear on the PlayStation 2, which is the one
Cold where Fear was stellar.
Like that should alone get a remaster or a remake because it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like Resident Evil Revelations, the one set on a boat, stole so many of the ideas from that.
Yeah, man, yeah, definitely.
But there was another one that where you played a kid who had like telekinetic powers. And I think it was called like Galerians or something like that. And
oh, maybe. I was thinking of Second Sight and PsyOps.
Oh, what a game. What game? Sorry. But I feel like there's games like that that should probably these days do really well because you can imagine a Resident Evil style like action, but with the power to have like throwing objects at people, pyrokinesis on top of that.
Maybe you need to like block a door or something and you can grab the stuff in the room to like block it. I would love it if they use this service to sort of test mechanics. Like you can test general playability of stuff, but if you put trophies into these games, I guess you can track how much people use certain mechanics. Maybe that can inform whether you do put more telekinetic power stuff into games or something like that. Because I mean, the 90s and the 2000s, I kind of, especially the 2000s, with the rise of the PS2 and everything, were just this great wild west of game mechanics and ideas and everything before everything got locked down as we are now, where it's like, well, only this is popular. Only people only respond to this.
Yeah.
Obviously, that still exists in the indie space. But yeah, I would use it to test a whole bunch of different game mechanics franchise stuff. And I would love it, like you said, with something like Cold Fear. Maybe you do like a, hey, you know Resident Evil 4? Well, here's this game. Here's these other things that you should try.
Yeah.
Or maybe you have like an Amy Hennig collection and it's like Uncharted. And like Soul Reaver and various things that she's worked on, and sort of get the creators out there as well. I just want overall collation, to be honest. I want them to do a lot more than they are at the minute, where it's just one big feed of every single game in a big line.
Yeah, a lot better. 100% agree.
But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. We will return with a full-on Twitter asked question feed poll trough thing.
Golden trough week. Is Golden over. Trough. Back to the regular trough.
Yes, when we're back next week. But for now, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're on Twitter at
RetroJ, but the O is a zero.
And I'm at /LP89. Until then, we'll catch you then. I said then twice. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.